Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
About America. I've had a fantastic time, and I think the people in Minnesota are the nicest people I've ever met in my life.
Oh, really?
The whole Minnesota nice thing is so true. And people I've met who have been very generous and kind to me, but also strangers in the supermarket, and not even interacting with me, but people's interactions with each other are much more genuine. People talk more. Yeah, it's been noticeable.
The voice you just heard, providing her insight and perspective to her time in Minnesota and the U.S., is Rachel Kane. And Rachel Kane is from New Zealand. She was here, and she'll talk about this a little bit more, but just to give you kind of a little bit of overview, she was here for 2 months volunteering with the Domestic Intervention Awareness Program to learn about the Duluth model and to take that information back home to New Zealand, where she can integrate it with the work that she's doing. I had the pleasure of meeting Rachel for the first time when she was actually observing one of the groups that I co-facilitate at DAIP. And I thought, you know, this is a really cool opportunity. First of all, she's here for 2 months in our little city to explore this program. And what a fun perspective that she has and brings. And I'm always interested in what other countries are doing differently than we are, and hearing the perspectives of the people that come from there to here and here to there. And I thought, what a great opportunity to share some of that information with everybody. And we could all hear from an actual perspective rather than a website. So basically, we sat down, had a chat about a bunch of different topics, and she could share her perspective and her impressions of our world. One little disclaimer that I would like to toss out there for my own sanity's sake is, as you will definitely hear in the interview, I had a pretty intense case of bronchitis that I thought I was getting over, and certainly was moving that direction, but I think I thought that I was actually doing much better that day than I really was, and my brain was definitely not firing on all cylinders. So I didn't dive into some things as deeply as I maybe wish that I had. And we had this conversation a few hours before she left Duluth and had postponed it due to my little bronchitis illness. So my opportunities to talk to her live and in living color were limited. That being said, we had a really great conversation, and I think you'll enjoy it. There are a couple things that I do want to just give a little bit of clarifications on before we start the actual discussion. So I mentioned before DAIP, which is the Domestic Abuse Intervention Program, and she talks about the Duluth model. So if you're not familiar with the Duluth model is actually a not just nationally, but worldwide recognized program. Obviously, she's coming here to learn about it from New Zealand. And in my experience working with DAIP and the training, we've had people in trainings from all over the world that are coming to learn about this. But and this could be explained much better by other people, but to try to give you a little bit of a taste, it's to reduce domestic violence against women by taking all of the different agencies and systems that are in a community and sort of bring them all together, working together so that people are on the same page and working together for the situation instead of just sort of working in their own silos, as Rachel mentions. Two other random things that will make sense while you're listening to the interview. I mentioned we were talking about meat, and I mentioned a restaurant where you could eat like as much meat as you wanted. And I couldn't remember the name of the time, but it's Tequila Berries, just in case anybody else is listening and it's making them crazy. Tequila Berries, which I know is in Minnesota, and I don't know if it was anywhere else in the country, you could go into the loft and pay like one price to go have prime rib, and then they would just keep bringing it out and bringing it out and bringing it out. And I watched multiple men get very, very sick from outdoing each other with their meat eating abilities. And the other thing is, we were talking about local food up here in Duluth and how we don't really have any local food during the winter. So Rachel and everybody else listening, one of the things that I forgot to mention was that we do have some local food that comes from hydroponics and aquaponics. And I don't know how many of each types of those facilities we have, but we have tomatoes that are grown all year round, and some places that grow various types of greens and lettuce, and I'm betting something else. but I don't know for sure what those are. Okay, I think I've preloaded all the footnotes, so come on and join us in the conversation.
So, Rachel, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us why you're here in the US and for how long.
Okay, my name is Rachel Kane, and I'm here in the US in Duluth for 2 months from New Zealand. So I'm here to do volunteering at DAIP, the Domestic Abuse Intervention Programs. I've just finished my master's degree in New Zealand,
okay,
which was in social and community leadership.
Oh, interesting.
Previously, I was a history teacher, but I volunteered at Women's Refuge for a period of time and became really interested in domestic violence and the response. So went back into my master's, and then I wanted to get some experience before applying for jobs. And there's all these programs in Africa and these sort of things you can do. And I just woke up in the middle of the night one night and thought, why don't I go to ask the Duluth model if I can go there?
Oh, wow.
Because I'd used a lot of it in my research, and it's the wheels and everything are used extensively throughout New Zealand. So I emailed Scott, and he emailed back and said, yeah, that's great. We'd love to have you.
Wow, what a long way to come, right?
Well, I worked out that actually from Duluth to my hometown is 10,000 miles.
Oh, wow. Well, hey.
So straight across the Pacific.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's cool. It's just funny to think of our little Duluth tiny town to, you know, be this place that, I mean, and I know the Duluth model is a big deal. What we do have going on here in our little city.
Well, so many people don't know about it. People I've met, you know, who are baffled by me being here.
Mm-hmm.
And they say it's this amazing international program.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's something I actually want to explore on the podcast at some point, because I think it is a really cool deal.
Do you want me to tell you a little bit about New Zealand?
Yeah,
just
yes.
In general?
Yeah, no, yeah. Definitely. And the size of New Zealand. So you said...
So it's... population is 4.2, I think, currently, or last there was a census. I think it's about 4.2 million in the country. The country is split into two islands, the North Island and the South Island. And in total, both islands are 3 times the size of Lake Superior.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, I used to tell people that New Zealand was the size of the United Kingdom, but nobody here knows how big that is. So I had to find a more local point of reference. And New Zealand runs up and down pretty much lines of latitude. So the North Island is much more moderate in climate than the South Island.
Okay.
The South Island's closer to Antarctica. South Island is a huge mountain range that runs through the middle of it. It's geographically the larger island, but a lot of it is inhospitable because it's a mountain range. So only 1 million people live in the South Island. There's one big city which has 500,000. And the rest, it's quite a rural farming culture in the South Island. The North Island doesn't have big mountains, and it has Auckland at the top, which is our big city with 1.3 million, I think, and Wellington at the bottom, which is our capital city with about 500,000. So 90% of the population live on the coast around both islands. It's traditionally rural, so traditionally farming, but now our biggest industries are dairy, forestry, and farm and tourism.
Okay.
With a lot of tourists. What do you know about New Zealand?
I don't know a whole lot. So my knowledge of New Zealand is very tiny. And then actually, sadly, a comedian who I just watched a special on, and she talked about it being very, just very small. And she joked about a lot of everybody was related to everybody.
Oh, yeah, they are.
I've always been intrigued with... Australia has always interested me, and then obviously being so close, you know, you look at a map and you just kind of don't really get a real true sense of, like, how far is it across?
So it's about 3 to 4 hours from Australia to New Zealand.
Okay.
From closest point to closest point. So on a map, because world maps, globes, are, you know, cut from, you know, the world is round, not flat. So that distance often gets distorted and people think that it's very close.
Uh-huh.
It's not. Culturally, we're very similar, though, to Australia.
Okay.
So rugby is one of our big parts of our culture. We play a lot of rugby. We're very proud of our rugby team. Everyone's interested in rugby. We have a native indigenous population called Māori.
Okay.
And Māori is culturally related to Hawaii and Hawaiians. They came Māori were Polynesians and moved down from Polynesia, from Hawaii. So there's similarities there. And they make up about 15% of our population of people who identify as Māori. We also have a big Asian influence now, which has been increasing, which is fantastic for the food.
Mm.
We have a lot of excellent, cheap Asian, and it's phenomenal. And we have quite a large Indian immigration.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's... But people don't really leave, because it's really hard to leave. We have what's called the brain drain.
Okay.
Where our highly educated people move to Australia, because there's better jobs and better pay. Yeah, and people go on holidays to Australia and Fiji.
So you talk about how far it is from Australia. How far is it, like, across...
Across New Zealand?
Across New Zealand, yeah.
I think it's about 4 hours at the widest point and about 40 minutes at the closest point.
Oh, wow.
Point.
Okay. Yeah. That's just kind of cool to be, like, in the middle of this water everywhere.
Yeah, water everywhere and not a drop to drink.
Do you guys have issues with
no,
clean water?
No, we have a lot of fresh water. Okay. We have a lot of mountains and springs and lakes. Most of our power, I think something like 70% of our power is hydro, comes from damming rivers and lakes. Yeah.
So I've asked you here to talk about the things that you, from your experience of being in the U.S., about the differences that you have seen or what you've noticed about the U.S. compared to New Zealand and when it comes to, like, health and food and just, you know, I think having different perspectives of other cultures are so important, and we're struggling here in the U.S., obviously, so much. You know, we have amazing research and we have amazing a lot of things, but we're really struggling. And I think it's really interesting to see what other people are doing in other places. So I'm just interested in your experience and reaction. Everybody loves food. Mm-hmm. Let's start with food.
Well, the big thing is sugar. Sugar, sugar, sugar. Everything here is so sweet. And even savory foods are sweet. Maple syrup bacon and dressings. I had some French dressing the other day and that was sweet on a salad. Everything has got sugar, and often it's not even sugar, it's corn syrup or chemical reproductions of sugar. So that's been a big adjustment.
Uh-huh.
And beyond sugar, one of the other things I've noticed is the use of chemicals in foods is much higher.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's in sauces or in just in foods in general, but food here seems to be much kind of not less real, but there's less cooking of sort of primary food. If you make a cake, you buy the box and make it. Things like I saw egg whites in a bottle.
Oh, right.
We don't have that, so it's a lot more pre-produced food, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the problems with that are then you have preservatives in it and you have other chemicals and you have sugar and everything that goes into prepackaged and pre-produced foods.
So do you, in New Zealand, do you have, first of all, like you're saying, you just don't have it in your food? Is that just because they haven't introduced it or they've decided, yeah, those things aren't good, or do you know?
We have it to an extent. Uh-huh. We have sugar to an extent, we have pre-packaged foods to an extent, but just not the same extent.
Okay.
So if you were cooking dinner in New Zealand, you might use a packet sauce, but a lot of people wouldn't.
Okay.
It's a lot more working with raw ingredients. I think part of it is because we're such an isolated little island, we just simply don't have a lot of the options that you have here. And I think we're better regulated. So everything in New Zealand, all food that is sold, prepackaged food, needs to have a very detailed, accurate list of ingredients.
Okay.
On everything. Whether it's you buy a muffin from the bakery, it needs to have the list of ingredients, or a can of tomatoes, everything.
Right.
And there's been a lot of education and awareness around reading that in New Zealand over the last 5 to 10 years.
Okay.
And then products have responded by getting rid of some of the things that
people are not wanting.
The slogan or the tagline is sort of, don't eat anything that's got numbers in the ingredients.
Ah, interesting.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, dye number, whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, so when it comes to, because I think of the chemicals here, you know, we're huge on pesticides and things like that. It seems like we sometimes, and we're trying to get better on this, but it's hard. It's hard, you know, companies are pushing back, definitely. But I'm thinking of like organic food, right? Here, we have to label it organic. It's on the onus of the person who didn't use the chemicals to label instead of just saying, well, no, obviously it's broccoli. It's just broccoli, you know. Mm. What is that down? Do you guys have organic food down there?
We do have organic. So to be organic, you have to be a certified organic producer, which means that you're not allowed to use pesticides and herbicides, and you're not allowed to use a range of things. So every supermarket and a lot of cafes and things will be organic.
Okay.
It's slightly more expensive, but it is widely used. A lot of people aim for organic.
Okay. So similar to here, it's similar, in that respect. Yeah. Talk about, like, we have health food stores and health food sections. Is that...
We do, but again, not to the extent. I wonder if it's because our diet is probably a little bit more healthy, so there's less need for supplements and other health.
Yeah, well, and I mean, just this, you know, you think about our grocery stores and how, you know, the thing that we always say is shopping on the perimeter, because that's where the fresh produce and things are, and then the aisles is more where your processed foods are. And so I'm thinking, like you said, you don't have so many processed foods, so that probably just the ratio of that in the store is probably really
that's
different.
One of the things I've written down. I can't get over how big the frozen pizza section is. Ours is only one fridge, like one meter wide, 3 foot wide fridge of frozen pizzas. It's not a whole aisle.
Right.
So our supermarkets is definitely a lot more fresh produce than just the perimeter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, if we still have it, it's...
Right.
Yeah.
It's just not a ton of... I spent 6 months in India, and that was, kind of, there was a lot more raw and real ingredients in the aisles, and then you had a freezer aisle, you know, more so. So I'm guessing it's similar to that. Yeah. Size of the grocery, I'm just curious, the size of the grocery stores, are they similar to ours?
Yeah, they are similar. We have some really big ones, and then we have the smaller local ones. They are pretty similar.
Okay. And talk about, like you say, more people... you're using more raw ingredients. Is that something that kind of comes down from family education, or what is the school teaching you?
So that comes from historically. So when my parents, I'm 30, when my parents were growing up, they said you couldn't get most things you can buy in the supermarket now. So even vegetables, you couldn't get broccoli.
Oh,
broccoli
okay.
just didn't exist.
Okay.
So you'd have peas, carrots, corn, very basic traditional food. And so most New Zealanders before the 70s would have lamb or beef, potatoes, and three vegetables for dinner every single night. There wasn't granola, there wasn't Greek yogurt, yogurt wasn't really a thing. It was very traditional sort of farming there. And that's changed now. We have a huge Asian influence. But so I think that people just learn from their parents, that cooking thing. I think that's where that fundamental base of just cooking from the garden or the, you know, real foods comes from.
Right.
We do have health and food education in schools because it has deteriorated a lot in the last 30 years. I suppose that's a reflection on society. People are busier, there's more access to bad foods. Mm.
And it's all designed to taste good on some level.
MSG is highly addictive. And it's cheap. It's much cheaper to eat a pie than to cook a steak.
Right.
Yeah.
And you mentioned your meat with three vegetables. Mm-hmm. So talk about the ratio on that, because I know in one of my classes I had a student who said that their friend had spent some time in Australia, and they said, you know, the family that they were living with was, you know, you when you asked what was for dinner, you talked about the three vegetables,
right?
And then the meat was sort of like this sort of side thing. Is that...
No, you mentioned that earlier. No, ours is the meat, but our rule of thumb is you eat as much meat as your palm, the size of your palm.
Okay.
But if I said to Mum, what are we having for dinner? She would say, we're having lamb.
Okay.
Or we're having chicken.
So that's still
the meat.
So
it's very similar, yeah.
Okay, but
we still have the three vegetables around the side. And
got
the,
it. Yeah. Okay. That's a nice little tradition, a way to get more vegetables in. I love that. So in education, let's talk a little bit about you talk about the health declining and you know, I think in the US, for instance, the access to a lot more produced food, mm-hmm. of course, is a big deal. But of course, companies' influence and advertising and all of that has been such a big thing on us and for us. And, you know, companies spend millions of dollars to figure out how to manipulate our mind to get us to do what they want us to do and buy what they want us to buy. What's your experience with that?
Well, it's illegal to be able to lobby in New Zealand.
Okay.
So wow. I think that's probably, not just with health and wellness, but between the two countries, I think that's probably the most influential difference in everything. So we don't have these big corporations. They don't have the power to influence the government like that. But, you know, they still do very effective advertising. It's very targeted advertising. They know what they're producing for different people. With the decline in our health, we've had a big rise in immigration from the Pacific Islands, and Pacific Islanders struggle with health in a changing society. The Pacific Islands are very traditional. There's a lot of fish and pork and, you know, cooking from there, but big companies have gone in and have a whole lot of very, very poor processed foods that Pacific Islanders has changed their diet with terrible consequences. They've got some of the worst rates of obesity and diabetes in the world. I think their average age, life expectancy for Pacific Islanders is 20 years lower than New Zealand Europeans in New Zealand.
Wow.
That's the ones that live in New Zealand. And so that overall, if you look at the overall statistics, that has raised our obesity and our weight things. It does tend to be the minorities who have poor health, and it's definitely socioeconomic as well. Whether that's because the food is cheaper, because the education is less, there's a whole range of factors there. I forgot what the question was.
Education. Advertising.
Advertising.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so our whole school curriculum is one of the key things that the whole, regardless of subject thing, is based on is critical thinking. So in every subject, in every year, you are taught to analyse and learn things through critical thinking. And advertising is come back to throughout your education as you go through schools. So as a child, you will make advertisements, and then you'll talk about why things are on different advertisements and compare them to real ones. And then that gets more sophisticated as you get older. Just really critically analysing what advertisements are trying to tell you, what they're not telling you, who they're targeted at, and why. So it's definitely an ongoing theme.
Wow, so yeah.
It does provide an awareness of, you know, if you see a girl in a bikini drinking a bottle of Coke on the beach, if you drink a bottle of Coke on the beach, you're not going to look like the girl in the bikini on the ad with the bubbles flying up.
Right.
Yeah.
trying to override that.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing. I know.
You know,
it's. I did a project when I was in college looking at how women were portrayed in the media. Mm-hmm. And one of my co-people, you know, she was looking at both the Photoshopped images and the non-Photoshopped images. And she's like, oh my gosh, I totally know what's going on here. But after a while, the non-Photoshopped images are starting to look wrong to me. She's like, if this is doing this to my brain, what is this doing to everybody's brain?
Yeah, so it's so important to be aware of that, but it's hard to think about it all the time.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Do they have regulations? I know some countries have regulations about what they allow in ads or the women, you know, how much Photoshopping or...
I'm not sure about that. I know that we have a very strong sort of social conscience about the portrayal of women. There's always, like, often billboards are taken down, TV adverts are pulled because of the complaints from the population if there is gross gender, things like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Billabong, the surfing brand, they had a big billboard up, and it was for swimwear. And there was a guy way out on a surfboard surfing a wave. You could hardly see him in this picture. And that was the male ad. And the female ad was this woman in a bikini lying on the beach about 1 foot away from the camera. And so there was such an uproar that they took that down and issued an apology.
Wow.
And put the girl out on a surfboard in the sea. But it does still happen. But.
Right. Wow. It's just interesting how, I mean, I guess I don't fully know what goes on here. I know that people complain about things, but I'm kind of amazed at what we don't complain about.
Yeah.
What is allowed or let by or... Mm. Yeah, that people kind of just like, okay, you know, it kind of, yeah. It feels like it wears us down, wears our conscientiousness down.
And sometimes you just don't notice things because it's always been that way. Mm-hmm. So I had this conversation with a woman at work yesterday. A girl in New Zealand who was 8 wrote a letter, it wasn't long ago, weeks I think, to her local mayor or city councillor and said, I really wanted when I grow up to work in construction. But every day I walk to school and I walk past a sign that says men at work. Why am I not allowed?
Uh-huh.
And the whole country were like, well, this is right. And nobody had thought about the signs because the signs have always been there saying men at work. So now they're changing them to construction workers or something like that. Uh-huh. But I drove past one with all the construction in Duluth yesterday, a big sign out saying men at work. So just, yeah.
And we think about it and we kind of think, and I certainly hear this like you say, well, it's always been that way. But little kids think about, you know, I mean, we all do take it in on some level, but little kids, when they're thinking about it critically, okay, that doesn't apply to me then.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's, so they've changed all our signs.
Before I forget, I just want to touch on meat. Tell me about meat in New Zealand. You know, I don't know what your experience has been here in the U.S. when we have ranges of what we can get cost-wise for meat and how it's produced and that kind of stuff and labels and all of those things. Tell me about your experience with that.
Well, I'm from a beef farm in New Zealand.
Okay.
My father's a farmer. And first of all our farms are outside. So we don't have this grain-fed, grass-fed difference because it's all grass-fed. And we export most of it to America. Yes, we have the same range. If you're going to buy mince in the supermarket, you can start off with some that's very low quality but very cheap. And then you can go right up to high quality, and the more expensive, the better the quality, do you know? So that's similar. Turkey has probably been the biggest difference I've noticed in meat.
Really?
We have a turkey for Christmas, and that's generally it. There might be a little bit of turkey. Meat seems, a lot of people seem to think that meat's quite unhealthy here, and turkeys are, I've been told, is an alternative to that.
An alternative to...
Red meat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, people who don't eat red meat, if they're eating meat, they will eat turkey and chicken, yeah.
Mm. We have a lot more lamb, a lot more red meat.
And you have this sort of portion control thing of the
palm
of the hand.
Yeah, which I mean, people are not great at. New Zealanders love meat. We love red meat. We eat a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As you've probably seen here, a lot of times big steaks.
Yeah.
A lot of times, yeah. We used to have this place called, oh my gosh, I can't think of what it was called. And it was if you went into the loft of this restaurant, they had a particular type of beef. That why I can't remember, because I don't eat it very often.
Yeah.
And you just eat, and you eat, and you eat, and a lot of guys will go in there and then will compete with each other about how many of this, how much meat you can eat. And I'm just like,
yuck.
It's disgusting. Yeah. And it's those kinds of things that it's like, wah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
mm-hmm.
where we get ourselves in serious trouble.
Yeah.
Is to have that, to be kind of the norm and to be, you know, and then we have these big burger places that'll sell you, you know, crazy, crazy amounts of food. So our restaurants do not help us in portion control at all. Is that so do you guys have that too, or
not to the same extent? Of I mean, I've seen, not that I've been to many of these places, but you see all these videos on Facebook and YouTube and places of, like you say, restaurants that offer competitions who can eat the burger the size of the table and like you know, things like that. And we don't have a lot of that. There's not really the market for that. Not that we're not greedy and we don't overeat, because we do. But it's, not sort of such an entertainment, I guess.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And we, you know, celebrate food. And you guys have probably too. We've gone through this, like you were saying, you used to have a turkey, or you have a turkey once a year. Well, we used to have more of those foods. And now, because obviously we can get everything whenever we want it, we kind of, every day is celebration, whether that's whatever food we want, don't have to think seasonally anymore, you know, or sweets or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of this I deserve thing sometimes that comes into play.
We reward and celebrate with food from childhood, which I think is damaging. Like, probably similar to what you do here, you know, if you're good, you can have a treat, which just, I think it creates a pretty unhealthy mindset around food. Is not always, but I think it can do.
Right.
Problematic relationships with food, because it's always sweets or sugars or things like that.
Yeah, it's usually not.
If you're good, you'll get a banana.
Exactly. If we could do that, that would be a great shift in our culture and for around the world, I'm sure. Let's talk about whatever you have to share, if you have anything to share. Fitness, exercise. We have gyms. Is that something, you know, fitness gyms, is that something you guys have?
We have had the gym revolution.
Okay.
Gyms are everywhere. Everyone goes to the gym. There's a range of gyms, whether you go to CrossFit or yoga or... There's all these tailored gyms. Then there's big gyms, there's little gyms, there's gyms that don't use equipment and you, like, throw ropes and all sorts of things.
More resistance-type training.
But... everybody goes to the gym.
Gotcha. Okay.
They've got cheaper. I think around fitness, people probably walk a little bit more at home, but not outstandingly.
Okay. So it's not a huge shift.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And you guys have a much different climate than we do.
We do.
Obviously,
we do. And so. I think that actually has been a big part of the walking, is that everyone is so used, you know, because you can't walk in winter here.
Right. Not easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's our climate is much more moderate.
Yeah.
You can catch the bus and you can walk and you can do cycle in all weather. Cycling is big.
It's a night. It would be so. And that's one reason I'd love to live in warmer weather, of just to go outside and make the decision to go out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that's a huge obstacle with some of the classes that I teach and things like that. Is sometimes you get so used to almost the winter habits that when we have a little bit of summer, you almost forget about what you can do outside.
And is it hard? Just jumping back to food, with the winter must affect the food and the availability of local. Seasonal, I assume there is no local seasonal grown things in winter.
No, we have some farms who like store things, so there is some things that come, but a lot of things are, it's all coming from somewhere else, except for the...
somewhere else not covered in snow.
Like you say, we've got some farms who store, but I don't even know how long that lasts for us, so eating locally is very...
very
tricky up here, and growing and all of that stuff, and people are trying to do more things in their houses and things like that too sometimes, so, but you can only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
You touched on lobbying.
Right.
Elections.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I looked this up the other day, and we have two main political parties. They're both very, one's slightly right, one's slightly left. Conservative and not, and but they're very centre. There's not a huge amount between them. And we have a cap on political advertising. So I think it's about each of the two major parties is allowed to spend $3 million New Zealand, which is about $2 million US, on their campaign.
Okay.
And that includes TV advertising, radio advertising, billboards, everything. And they're only allowed to advertise, I can't remember. I feel like it's a month before the elections.
Okay.
And that's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's a different...
But, you know, that's not directly relatable because we're a geographically very small country with only 4 million. So you wouldn't be able to get around America
on
that budget.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that... Yeah.
So that needs to be taken into consideration. But I still think it's disproportionate.
Yeah. Well, and how nice to, I'm thinking that would make them have to be, make people have to be more politically concise.
Well, yeah, the trouble with it is that New Zealanders are not overly political. So most New Zealanders will vote for who their parents voted for and they won't. And because there is not a complete saturation around election time, you don't really know what the policies are and the differences are because it's, you know, it's not in your face everywhere.
Uh-huh. Okay.
People talk about it and things, but...
But it's not. Maybe not. Maybe a little more would be helpful,
yeah,
just to get
it would.
More time to...
And we're not. They're not allowed to slag each other off.
Okay.
They're only allowed to talk about them. And they can refer to others, but nothing specific.
Okay.
So that turns it into less of a, like, fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which
from, you know, from our perspective, like you're saying, is maybe not enough information,
yeah,
maybe more education would be helpful. And from our perspective, we think everybody's just so exhausted. They're like, oh my God, what a relief that would be, you know.
Yeah.
To have people have to be more concise in a smaller time frame,
mm-hmm,
would be very, very interesting on our end of things. But again, like you say, the size is a big deal too.
Wow. And it's a much simpler system. We're one election every 3 years, and you vote for your national party and you vote for your local all at once.
Oh, wow. So
yeah.
Many less elections.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow. That does sound nice. Sorry. I mean, at the same time, having changeover in the middle of things, I think, has some benefit,
yeah,
here too. But it would be interesting to experience that and how that's all put together.
I find it really interesting here how it all works together. It's quite jurisdictional. And, you know, and how the states work within the federal system, and, you know, even counties and things.
Yeah. So New Zealand is, like you said, small. So, yeah, we're here divided in all of those different... Are you divided in different ways, or is it more...
There are regions in New Zealand.
Okay.
I think there's, oh, I don't know, 10. And each of those is governed by a regional council. And then the major cities have a city council, and they have elected councillors, but that's not, they don't really do much. All the police, all the education, everything is just federal, I suppose. Just
okay.
One, yeah.
Oh, health insurance. That's another thing I wanted to ask you about, is kind of your health system. Like, give me a general sense of what does it look like in your system with, like, doctors, hospitals, what kind of medicine maybe that they practice, but then also the insurance piece,
mm-hmm,
of it too.
So we have a public health system. There are, I think there's about 6 large hospitals throughout New Zealand, and smaller ones, there's doctors everywhere. And to go to the doctors, I think is about $20 US, maybe 30, that some of them range a little bit. But if you are under a threshold, it's free.
Okay.
And then major, anything that you need in the hospital, anything beyond the doctors, is free. Emergency department is free. So most people don't have health insurance.
Okay.
And that's fine. Some people do, and that there is a coexisting private system. So there's a couple, maybe 3 private hospitals, and some surgeries. People generally get health insurance for surgeries because there's a list in the public system. So you might have to wait a year for a hip or something.
Oh, okay.
But if you're on the private, if you have private health insurance, it's much faster.
Okay.
But it's generally the same doctors. The doctors staff, if you're a specialist, you might do 20 hours at a public hospital and 20 hours at a private hospital.
Okay.
They still feel an obligation to work within the public system. And I think after their training, they legally have to for a number of years. So the private system is there. It's not widely accessed,
okay,
because the public system, it has its flaws. Some cities are better than others. Wait times can be a problem for certain surgeries, but it's available to everyone. Yeah.
And how did your experience with the healthcare system?
Well,
like
I'm pretty young and healthy, so I haven't had a huge amount of experience with it. But my sister and brother are both doctors, and several friends, and works pretty well. I mean,
and I don't know a lot about your guys' medicine, and, you know, and how,
yeah,
like, when I'm thinking of here, you know, we go to the doctors and it's more of a drug culture typically, and then we have what people are trying to integrate, quote unquote, alternative options, which can be everything from massage to energy work to,
yeah,
herbals to various supplement. I mean, so many things are encapsulated in that. What does your system look like when it comes to that?
Well, I watched the news here the other day and I was horrified at every advert is for pharmaceuticals. And there's just so much pharmaceutical advertising and influence everywhere. It's illegal for pharmaceutical companies to sell through doctors or to sell, to advertise or do anything in New Zealand. So it's a highly regulated. Government controls it and medical district boards.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no drugs that you don't need prescriptions for, like hay fever pills and things. We have TV adverts for those. But not, you know, I've seen adverts for pills if you've got cancers and heart disease and all these things. You'd never see an advert for that because they're not allowed to advertise. So the doctors know about that and they do it. But you don't, I mean, you might Google if there's something wrong with you and what might help you and you go to the doctor. The doctor will be like, no, don't be ridiculous. I'm the doctor. This is what you're having. And we have had problems with sort of over-medicating in the past, but there's been a big resurgence against that in the last 10 years. And just for, you know, people going to the doctor for a cold and things. And so doctors are prescribing a lot less for that. And there is the alternative medicine, which some people really get into. A minority, a small minority.
What is like included in your quote unquote alternative
medicine? Alternative medicine, supplements. There's that colour therapy. That's not very big though. Well, I don't know a lot about it. Okay. Some people swear by it. I had a friend who ate carrots. Ate a lot of carrots as alternative medicine.
Ah.
She swore by carrots. She would literally eat about 5 kgs. I don't know what that is. A big bag of carrots every day.
Uh huh.
She went orange.
Oh dear, yes, that happens. Oh boy.
But so yeah, the alternative medicine is there. It's disregarded by the mainstream medical people.
Okay.
But
yeah, it's always interested in what's considered what, as far as, you know, some countries have more of what we kind of look at as quote-unquote alternative therapies even than are, you know, that are more in their mainstream and part of what they do.
No, it's quite separate.
Yeah, our drug culture is obviously kind of insane. And, yeah, go here, have your doctor recommend this, you know, and yeah, that's fascinating.
Because a TV advert is going to tell you what's right as opposed to a doctor with a medical degree.
Well, right, and it's not even like suggesting, hey, check, we're available, see if this might be, it's just this, it's kind of worded that way, but it's so push,
mm-hmm.
you know, is so much of what's going on there, and the amount of them, and the amount of, I'm always fascinated with the drug commercials in, little bit is telling you about the drug, and then the disclaimer of all of the side effects is a majority of a commercial.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, wow, okay, I guess I'm glad you have to list that, but at the same time, I think it makes us numb to it. We keep hearing it.
Because you think,
like,
oh, everyone has that. They all have this, that's irrelevant.
Exactly. And I think that's sometimes exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that that gets talked about, of course, and we're having issues with this all over the place here politically, is our gun culture.
Oh, yes.
And I was listening to a great, I thought it was really interesting, and I don't know where I fall on aspects of gun control, but a comedian talking from Australia's perspective on gun control and making a lot of very interesting points about how things have really changed there. And what is it in New Zealand for you guys?
So we're very similar to Australia. We don't have a gun culture. There is hunting. We have deer and pigs. So you can get a permit. You can get a gun license. To get a gun license, you have to have about 3 interviews with the police. You need to have reference checks with solid members of society. You need to go through, I think it's 3 different tests, written tests. Then the police will come out and visit your house. You need to have a metal gun safe that is bolted into the ground and another separate box bolted into the wall for the bolts and the bullets. Guns are highly restricted. You're not allowed pistols. I think you're allowed a pistol at a pistol range, but it's never allowed to leave the pistol range.
Okay.
You're not allowed semi-automatics. You're really only allowed rifles and shotguns. Because we don't want any guns that are designed to kill people. Our guns are designed to kill animals. And it's highly controlled. A lot of our guns are actually just left over from the war. World War II. A lot of wooden-barreled rifles. Illegally, every now and then, some of our gangs will get their hands on a gun. but there's not really gun violence and gun crimes. We have crimes, we have murders and things, but they're not generally related to guns. Guns are not used.
So I know the argument comes sometimes with that of, well, if they're not going to use a gun, they're just going to use something else.
I think we have about one murder a year.
Oh, wow.
It might be slightly higher than that. I think it's probably slightly... But it's not... I mean, but that's proportional. I don't know if that's proportional. But,
interesting. Okay.
But what you don't have is you don't have school shootings and you don't have that sort of thing. And I think the argument against that is if you have a gun, you're more likely to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone is coming at you and you have a gun in your hand, you're going to shoot them. If you have a brick in your hand, you're going to throw a brick at them, which is far less likely to kill them. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it might.
Right.
It has the potential to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Death is not generally the outcomes of our fights and our things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective on the value of life and protecting ourselves. And it's an interesting conversation that I, like I said, don't know where I land on, but I'm always interested in looking at, like, even what I've heard from, you know, from, like, you're saying in Australia and what doesn't happen there. It's kind of like, well, that's...
But it's not like we got to this point where America is now in change.
Right, and that's the so thing. That's, we have to deal with what we've got here, and that is a reality that absolutely...
Australia was a little bit further along, so they actually changed their laws, and they had these big bins out in the street, and everyone went and threw their guns in the bins.
Yeah.
And that worked really well. They actually did it last year again.
Oh, really?
I think because they realised that guns... ownership was seeping through again.
Okay.
And that was quite successful.
It's interesting that people will turn them in.
Mm.
You know.
It is.
That it's just like, okay. I mean, I assume, again, the argument there is going to be, well, the bad people are not going to turn them in. Which makes sense. I get that argument too. Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, our police don't have guns.
Okay.
Because they're not responding. There is an armed response unit.
Okay.
That, you know, if necessary, comes out. But general police don't have... Don't carry guns.
Okay.
Because then they don't normally need them to respond to situations that don't have guns.
You don't know what you're getting into here, so you've got to be prepared for for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very different culture in that respect.
I went to a gun shop here just to see what it was like.
Oh, yeah?
It was fascinating. I couldn't get over how cheap they were and the range of pistols and, you know, and then there's these big sort of assault-looking weapons and they've got pictures of... war of people in military uniforms in the Middle East or somewhere. Like, this is Duluth, you're not going to war.
Right.
You don't need this rifle.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, which gun shop did you go to?
Gander Outdoors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's,
it was hilarious.
Wow. I haven't been, well, my last time I was at a gun shop was quite a while ago. I don't remember there being pictures like that, but that's like disturbing.
I was disturbed.
Pictures there. That seems a little bit.
Next to the guns.
Okay. That's a little intense. And we don't need to go there. Wow. Okay. Curious. I do want to ask you, so you've come here to learn to be kind of in the midst of the Duluth model. So then you're going to go back home and, of course, this is going to prepare you, kind of help you set the stage for what you're doing. What maybe do you think, and let's just dive into this while we're here a little bit, on the kind of the domestic violence piece, do you see maybe as a difference or similarities, or do you even have a grip on that?
I think it's very similar.
Okay.
The power and control, and that is very similar. Our shared colonial history and our hierarchical systems are all the same, and that contributes to the cycles of abuse. And, you know, you see a lot of domestic violence that is historical. You know, people were brought up with it and perpetuate those cycles, and that's all very similar. Your drugs here are different to our drugs.
Okay.
We don't have heroin, just because you can't get it in. It's too far, so there is no heroin in New Zealand.
Okay.
So that probably helps things a little bit, but our rates are really bad. Our rates are just as high as America. If not, I think they are higher overall.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Your response, like DIAP, is much more systematic than ours. Ours is really, it's not fledgling, but it's, we're just starting to work together with different agencies and different organizations.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to organize the concept around responding to domestic violence, yeah, and supporting all of the people involved.
We had this term silo system. So everyone was operating in individual silos. And right, the situations weren't individual. You know, there's a mother and a child. And the family often would have six agencies already working with the family, all from different perspectives, and the police and the courts. So now trying to provide a more coordinated response.
Nice. Yeah. And do you kind of have a plan with where you're going to go with this when you go back to New Zealand?
So eventually I would like to work in systems reform, but I think I would like to do a couple of years as a community advocate for domestic violence and simultaneously work with violent men's groups. Just so I want some experience in the system and really understand the system and the flaws and the positives,
right,
first.
And have a chance, yeah, to talk to people who are in the system, yeah, to be find able to work out in the system effectively.
What people's experiences are.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's the plan.
So, anything else you want to share kind of about yourself and either about yourself or...
I do want to say one thing. Potentially because of the topics. Mm. I feel like I've been very negative about America. And it's not negative. I've had a fantastic time, and I think the people in Minnesota are the nicest people I've ever met in my life.
Oh, really?
The whole Minnesota nice thing is so true. And people I've met who have been very generous and kind to me, but also strangers in the supermarket, and not even interacting with me, but people's interactions with each other are much more genuine. People talk more. Yeah, it's been noticeable.
Interesting.
The people.
Okay, yeah. So not so much of that at home or your other travels in the other
countries. Yeah, Ireland would be the only country in the world, I think, that's anywhere near on the friendliness scale of America and especially Minnesota.
Have you been in other parts of the US as well? Or?
Yes, so I've been to San Francisco, Chicago, and New York. Not quite as friendly there, but yeah, and the cities here.
It's always interesting in hearing people's different perspectives, yeah, to that, because I've known people who have felt like New York was maybe not as friendly, but more willing to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. And I think sometimes it's so funny because we just had one of the guys in one of my groups was saying how Minnesotans are so crabby in the morning and nobody wants to talk to each other. And he's like walking down the street and just looks upset and everybody's like in their own zone. And yeah, it was, you know, so I hear both, yeah, of those perspectives. So it's very, very interesting how people perceive, mm-hmm, Minnesota and yeah, the US in general. But you're coming in summer, so mm-hmm, we're able to speak out of our hoods.
Yeah.
We don't have to be hiding behind that, which maybe helps too sometimes. Yeah. We get stuck in our own little shell sometimes, mm-hmm, I think a little bit.
And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. And, you know, American culture's got some amazing things in it. And American people and the country in general. It's not all bad.
Right. No, and you're right. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of highlighting some of those differences and,
yeah,
well, and what do you see here that we kind of are doing or have that is something that New Zealand would really benefit from?
I think people are more active here. So one thing that really struck me was driving down the highway and there's the signs of the different people who it's their responsibility to. No one in New Zealand would ever bother to go and do that.
To adopt a highway.
Yeah.
Okay.
No one, that would just be beyond the realms of possibility.
Really?
Yeah. So I think we're less active and less aware and less willing to take responsibility or participate.
Okay. In the community.
Yeah, in community sense. Okay. We don't really have community sense. Yeah, which is definitely something that needs to be worked on.
Interesting. Mm. Huh. Yeah. And that's cool. It's again, you spend time in your space and you're like, what does the rest of the world,
yeah,
do? And we kind of sometimes, I think, perceive, you know, there's always this sort of romanticized aspect of every other culture.
There is.
Right? And what they're doing and that kind of stuff, even in those, yeah, little ways. So what, in your travels here, what is one of your, maybe tell me about like one of the favorite things you've done or... some of the favorite things you have done or the experiences you've had, whether it be doing something or food or...
So I've been sailing.
Oh, cool.
I've never been on a sailboat before.
Really?
Yeah, and I've been doing quite a bit of sailing on the lake, and that's been fun.
That is neat.
I feel like I'm in the way all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know what to do, and then I got asked to, like, pull that rope 6 inches. And I'm like, what is an inch? But that's been really fun, and it's been beautiful in the summer, and, yeah, with the weather. That's one thing that's been special.
And it's so interesting because I think you're so surrounded by water.
I know. Everyone is baffled by the fact that we don't sail.
Yeah.
Because some people do, and those who do it really, really well. We have the America's Cup, and we win quite a lot of sailing at the Olympics, but it's a very small percentage of the country that does it.
And what part of the country? I meant to ask this a long time ago. What part of the country do you actually live in?
So I'm from a small town called Tarrace, which is near Wanaka, which is it's a ski town in the South Island in the mountains.
Okay.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Okay, nice. So what are your seasons like there?
So we have, New Zealand in general has four very distinct seasons, and they're all about the same length. They're all about 3 months.
Okay.
So our springs are chilly in the mornings, can get hot in the afternoon, it rains quite a lot. And then we have a hot, dry summer down there. The North Island, the summer is a little bit less hot, but we don't really have any humidity in New Zealand. Beautiful fall or autumn. We have a lot of deciduous trees, like up here, different trees, but I don't know if it's quite as nice as up here. It seems to be pretty famous.
We have a pretty nice fall.
Yeah, but ours is pretty nice. And then our winter is nothing like yours.
Okay.
And we might get snow on the ground 2 or 3 times, and it'll last overnight. Yeah, so it's manageable.
Wow.
Like, it's fine.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds good to me.
I can't give you temperatures because it's all different.
Right, I know. Yes. but the fact that you don't have... I mean, I love our snow. I don't love our ice. That's like you say, in the walking, and, you know, you can't just take off and go walking for the sake of, you know, and sidewalks and shoveling and walking in the middle of the street and ice and it's less fun. Not that people don't do it, because people totally do. I mean, some people really do, but it definitely takes a toll on that. It's a bummer.
Mm.
Nice. It sounds beautiful to me. That's all I can say. It sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So sailing has been kind of your big favorite thing that you've done here so far?
Sailing's been one thing, that's been really fun.
Have you had any foods here that you haven't had there?
Oh, I've had quite a lot.
Yeah.
I've had some really nice food here. There's some lovely restaurants here that have got good food. Something different. Not off the top of my head.
No.
The breweries here are good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a really nice craft beer culture in Duluth.
Yeah, which is, that's a big thing we got going on.
Fantastic quality. Yeah.
Yeah. And you went to the state fair.
I went to the state
fair.
Goodness me. I had deep fried cookie dough on a stick. I thought I was going to pass out.
Oh no!
I know. I may have got diabetes.
That syrupy sweet.
Oh, I don't know what it was. It was just it made me feel so ill.
Oh no!
So ill. It was
too
disgusting.
Much. Wow.
Yeah.
So okay. So I have to ask you this because I'm curious to know if it was the type of cookie dough or the fact that it was cookie dough. So
the fact that it was cookie dough and deep fried cookie dough.
Okay, well, right. Okay.
And it was just so sweet. I felt like I literally inhaled corn syrup.
Uh-huh.
I was like, this is like, it didn't really taste like anything rather than just this overwhelming chemically sweetness.
I'd never had that when I was at the fair, but I would love to have them do that with my mom's cookie dough. Because I'd to know, because my mom's cookie dough is the best cookie dough, of course.
Of course. Mom's always is.
I know. My mom made depression cookies, so they're very flour. They're more like biscuits.
Yeah.
Everybody who eats them is like, they're more like biscuits. I'm like, they're wonderful, because they're not syrupy sweet, you know. Anything that you, besides that you had at the fair, what was...
Deep-fried Twinkies. Almost everything we ate was deep-fried.
It's a very deep-fried culture at the fair. It's an interesting thing I don't personally quite understand, but I'm not into deep-fried foods that much.
No. I don't understand why everything has to be on a stick either.
Yeah, that's... Well, it's easy to carry.
Well, it's not, because it all falls off the stuff. They're much easier in like a cardboard wrap that you could hold on to.
Well, that's a good point. And half the time they could give it to you in a dish anyway.
On the stove.
Because they have to, because it's going to fall off. Yeah, I'd agree. I don't quite understand what this thing. We could save a lot of trees if we didn't put everything on a stick and just put it in the bowl that we're already putting it in anyway.
Yeah.
Nice. Did you do anything at the fair that was like different?
We went on like a slingshot ride where you sit in a ball and get pulled back and flung up into the sky. That was fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that... Are you kind of like a...
Yeah.
You like doing that kind of stuff?
We're pretty big on sort of adrenaline adventure things in New Zealand.
Really? Okay. So what does that mean?
Well, the bungee jump was invented in New Zealand.
Oh,
well,
okay.
That's a lie. The bungee jump was stolen and taken to New Zealand. It was taken... AJ Hackett was in Papua New Guinea, and their tribes, as a when they're entering manhood, one of the things they have to do is they have to climb a tall tree and tie their feet with a vine and drop. But it's not elastic, and it's never measured properly, so a lot of them die.
Oh.
Or like hit their spines and things. AJ Hackett was like, this is great, we can do this. So he took it back to New Zealand and turned it into the bungee jump.
Wow.
So we have a lot of that sort of thing. We jump off buildings, we jump out of planes,
much more adrenaline seeking.
Yeah, we're very adrenaline seeking. A lot of white water rafting is a big thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm not an adrenaline junkie. It looked fun, but my God, no, I'll die.
That's the fun bit. It's that moment right before you do it. Why am I doing this? I'm going to die.
I am such a wimp about stuff like that. Like, I just cannot, I don't know. I think my mom put the fear of God in me as a child, and everything was gonna hurt, and so I believed her, and so I like, my niece went she went skydiving, my brother-in-law went skydiving. My brother-in-law is totally blind, okay,
right.
He went, and I'm in the plane, I'm like, I will ride the plane with you guys and watch you jump out and try to get the guts, but I didn't. The funny thing was they seatbelted my parachute to the... They didn't seatbelt me in the plane. So we're banking, and the door is
open.
It's not an actual door. It's like a plastic thing. So I'm like watching the ground going, okay, don't get out of the parachute, because the parachute is attached to me, but it's attached to the plane. I'm not. That was adrenaline enough for me, thanks. Cool.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah. Thanks so much for being willing and sharing. And this is fun. It's fun to hear other people's perspectives.
Well, thank you for thinking of me. It's been interesting to talk about it.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you had a good time. I certainly did. Before I send you on your way, I just want to make you aware of an event that's happening in a couple weeks, Tuesday, October 16th. It is called the Fruit and Veggie Event, and Dr. Jocelyn Strand of Lake Superior Natural Medicine, as well as multiple time guests on this podcast, and Jean Wood of Life's Pure Balance are going to talk about fruit and veggies, what's on them, like all of the stuff, the pesticides, the stuff we don't really want on our fruits and veggies, and how to get it off. So Jean Wood is a chemist who has created this product. It is a non-residue, non-allergy veggie, fruit and veggie wash that, from my experience, as well as many others, but I've had this personally, my experience has been, it makes your grapes, makes your fruit taste better, strawberries. I think it just brings out the flavor of the fruit. Others too, but I absolutely, definitely was aware when I was eating both of those fruits that I did a little taste test too. So come and join us at 6 p.m. And again, you'll get to learn about all this stuff, and then we'll do some tasting and washing of various fruits and vegetables so you can get a chance to taste it, figure out how to do it, when to wash it, how to store it, all that fun stuff. It's taking place at the Regis Duluth offices, which are in the Wells Fargo building, 230 West Superior Street, Suite 400. Again, it's at 6 p.m. and we do want you to RSVP so we know exactly how much produce, make sure that we have enough produce so everybody gets to try and experience. You can go to the Facebook event, which you will find on the Wellness Renaissance Facebook page, and you can say that you're going there.
You can certainly message me or Wellness Renaissance on Facebook. If you are not on Facebook, go ahead, give me a call, email me. You can email me easily at judy@wellnessren.com. That's wellness, R-E-N, short for Renaissance, .com. And you can find that email if you are listening to this podcast. You can email on the podcast website. One way or another, it'll get to me and we'll know you're coming. And we can all use a little more inspiration to get a few more fruits and vegetables in our diet. So, hey, if they taste a little better, if there's a few less toxins and junk that our system doesn't have to process, those are all wonderful things. So, hope to see you there. Both Jocelyn and Jean are really great presenters and totally know their stuff, and it's going to be a really fun time. On that note, thank you so very much for listening. Please check out the other episodes of the podcast on wellnessrenpodcast.com. And if you look on the left, right under the big red button, you will see a place you can get signed up for the email list. We just shoot you an email when we have a new episode that tells you about it and how to link to it, makes it quick and easy. If you would like to support the podcast, there are easy, free, and non-free ways to do that. The first one is to share the podcast. Share it with the friends, share it with people that might be interested. That is so huge and wonderful for us. You can forward along the email, you can pass it through Facebook, talk to your friends. All those things are wonderful and great and totally appreciated. If you are an Amazon shopper, you can go to the website, wellnessrenpodcast.com. You're going to see a support the podcast link right on the website. And if you go there before you go to Amazon, tiny little chunk of your purchase, no cost to you, goes to us. And if you are interested and able to support with a monthly micropayment, as low as a dollar a month, that red button that I referred to on the left earlier that says become a patron, if you click on that, it'll take you to our Patreon site, which just allows you to sign up and support us that way. So thank you for whatever you feel called and are able to do. We are really appreciative for all of it. Have an absolutely wonderful week. We look forward to talking to you next week. Until then, may you find the pieces of your health and wellness puzzle that fit into place perfectly. Be well and take care.